This is Sava FC with Antonio Scarano, Ben Joyner, and Anthony Valenti.
Welcome to Sava FC, everyone. I'm with Ben and Antonio, and today we have a special guest. We have Giancarlo Natale, president of Nocerina. How's it going, Giancarlo?
It's going very well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, of course. Thank you for taking the time. We're excited to have you.
So, Giancarlo, let's get started. What made you decide to jump in buying this club?
All right. So, I'm a huge soccer fan, lifelong soccer fan, Italian soccer fan more over anything. And my dream has always been to buy a club, and I'm part of an investment group that was looking to acquire a piece of a higher level team in Italy. And during the market analysis research period, this whole Nocerina had been going through financial distress, and the previous president wasn't able to pay their players. So, somebody had mentioned, hey, take a look at it. And at the time, you know, I didn't really know much about Nocerina. I knew about the name. I've heard it in the past. And then, you know, we looked into it. We reached out to the previous ownership group. It took about 3 months of negotiation going back and forth. And it was actually, you know, a much better deal for me to acquire 100% of a team than only 30% of the team that we were looking at. And it's cool because we can implement, you know, our decisions. You know, when you're a minority stakeholder in any club like this, you know, you really contribute capital, but you don't really control the, you don't drive the train is actually, you know, the
right. You don't have a voice.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, you could bounce ideas off of the executives, but you know, at the end of the day, they're making the decisions. And my business partners and I, we really saw value in owning 100% of a club, and we took a shot, and it's been going great. It really has.
That's fantastic. And then a few short months later, Catania went bankrupt.
Oh, yes.
Antonio and I are looking to start a GoFundMe account.
Catania is a great team to acquire. I know a few Americans that were taking a look at it. I don't think they've advanced. But, you know, it's too bad. You know, you have a team with all that history, and they just kind of let it slip away. I hope for the best. I hope to see them back in the top tiers of Italian soccer for sure.
Giancarlo, I do have one question, though. So when I was looking Nocerina up, apparently the original club folded in, what was it, 2015? And then it was, yeah. Okay, so then it was another club that ended up taking its spot and name. So technically the club that you own was the second one. Are you guys keeping the same traditions from that first one?
Yeah. So yeah, it really is the original club. So
okay.
The story behind that is they had gone into to Serie C. They got relegated. They went bankrupt. And a few citizens of Nocera actually, you know, it's crazy because Nocerina for the people of Nocera is like their lives, literally. Like they wake up every day and all they care about is any moves that Nocerina made, if Nocerina's playing. so what they did was they acquired a title. And basically, if you want to start a team in Italian soccer, you can start from the bottom. There's a few requirements that you have to follow. But this guy got a bunch of citizens together. They ponied up the money together, and they launched the new Nocerina because the original went bankrupt. Kind of like what Catania is happening with Catania.
Right.
But these the locals, the people, they reestablished the name. They changed the name from ASG Nocerina to ASD Nocerina. And they launched it, and they had a really successful launch. They got a little bit of money, a little bit of investment money, and they were able to get to Serie D, where we are right now. And unfortunately, they didn't have the funds to really take it to the next level. There are two ownerships removed. So the previous guy who had the team, you know, he had the right intention, the right ideas. He just didn't have the financial tools to take the team to the next level.
Right. Speaking of funds, how does a team like yours make revenue to continue to go on? What do you guys do to be successful?
So the revenue stream is really tough in Serie D. I mean, the real money starts really in Serie B. Serie C is a little bit better because you get some kind of TV rights. But in Serie D, it's basically you know, ticket revenue and sponsorship and some merchandising are the streams of revenue. We have about 3,500 people to come to each game, which is ridiculous for Serie D. I mean, some of the clubs have, you know, 200, 250 people show up to these games. We have an army of fans and they're crazy. Wow. So
that's awesome.
I'm grateful for them that they come. The average ticket price is around 10 euros. So that's a stream of revenue. And then sponsorship, which is becoming huge, you know, seeing that we're an American group, we're kind of, you know, we kind of lit the fire under everybody. You know, they're basically like, oh, you know, these Americans came in, they have a great game plan, they want to take us to the top. So, you know, we're engaging with a lot of local businesses, and we're also planning to gain some American sponsors along the way, because we have a pretty cool project that we're actually working on in the United States as far as a soccer school and building club teams here. So we're trying to gain American sponsorship too. So those are the two main sources of revenue. The merchandising isn't where I hope it will be eventually. We're working on it, but you know, it's day by day, you know, step by step, we're growing the brand.
Is Serie A the ultimate goal for the club?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the dream. I mean, yeah, that would be honestly that. They may make a statue of me if I ever were to take Notre Dame to Serie A in the center of town.
Well, listen, man, when you were telling the story about what the club's been going through, it just reminded me of one of my favorite clubs, obviously, Napoli. You know, they went through it in the mid-2000s, so.
Exactly, and I always say that Aurelio De Laurentiis, for me, is a great model owner to follow. I mean, if you look at the way he handles his, you know, his P&Ls, his budget, his financials are unbelievable. I mean, as far as becoming a profitable Italian club, he's the king of creating this. And he took Napoli from Serie C to Serie A.
Right.
So, I mean, he's somebody that I really look up to, and he's great. As a Napoli supporter, I have a couple criticisms about him, but, you know, he's really good at what he does.
Well, I mean, listen, he not only did he do it with Napoli, but he's about to do it again with Bari. So obviously he has a method that's proven and that works.
It's very interesting because I think they just announced that the rule is changing where you can't own two Italian teams, even if they're in different divisions.
Correct.
So I'm very curious to see what he ends up doing.
Well, the theory behind it back in the day was that his son was going to take over one of the teams full time. But I don't know if they're going to allow those workarounds anymore. Because like we saw with Lazio and Salernitana and Serie A, Lotito had to get rid of Salernitana. Right. He couldn't own both.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I really thought about that. I said, you know, Lotito, how come he can't put one of the clubs in his brother's name or something, you know, to make it work? But I guess there's more to it. And I don't know if it's possible to do, but I hope he doesn't sell Napoli, but if he does sell Napoli, I hope whoever buys Napoli brings us to the top of Champions League.
Well, I read a few months back that he was going to sell to some American business owner that owns some small company named Amazon. So,
yeah, I heard that too. I was hoping that it's true. If that's the case, I'm all for it.
Right. So you were saying you guys are going to bring Academy here to the States?
Yes. Yeah. That's our game plan. So, you know, one of the pieces to our project is Settore Giovanile, which is the youth system. You know, that's, I think, in the soccer industry, if you own an organization, you need to build the youth. You need to cultivate the players. And Nocerino doesn't have that. We have one youth team, Juniores, and they basically they're the only team we have. You know, I want to build 9 teams and cultivate these players for the future. And, you know, out of 150 players, you're bound to get, you know, 10 really good players out of it.
Right.
And here, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, American soccer is, you know, it's so funny when I talk to Italians and they're like, oh, what do you think of the MLS? And it's like, all right, let's not talk about the MLS, but let's talk about the American players that are killing it in Europe right now.
Exactly.
So, there's a ton of talent in the United States, and it'd be foolish of me to not try to capitalize on finding some players here. So we're developing a youth academy here in the United States as well. We're in talks with a few different people in a few different places to make it happen. But yeah, hopefully that goes well, and hopefully we find the next superstars.
How would that work with the passports, though? Because they'd have to be European-based, yeah? Or European Parents, grandparents.
Yeah. So here's the deal. So in Serie D, where we are, is pretty much a free for all. Basically, I can bring in players from all over the world in Serie D. In Serie C, you can't. You're limited to two players that are not European, unless they start on your club in Serie D. So if it's called tesseramento, and it means to put this player under club prop. So you become a club property if you join our soccer academy.
Oh, so that's what you're trying to do both ways.
Yeah, so that once I do that, say we start next year, once I have them on their club property and we're in Serie D, even if we go up to Serie C, I can still play this American because he was part of the club when we started in Serie D.
Unless the American had Italian grandparents and was able to get a passport, then...
Correct.
Right.
There's so many ways to do it. I mean, I've been in touch with several agents. You know, they're the pros at this. They deal with this all the time. It's a lot easier to get an Italian passport than it is an American passport. So
that's true.
That's the one benefit for us.
No, I'm just thinking over here, but we've been having a lot of talks about Italian soccer, and obviously missing out on the World Cup has affected all of us Italians everywhere. On your team, when you're looking to build your squad, your roster, are you looking, we talked obviously about you getting some Americans to come over, international talent, but are you looking for your Italians as well to help promote the growth of the youth in Italy?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm still heartbroken that Italy's not in the World. I can't believe it's two World Cups and Italy's not in the World Cup. People make – I heard a bunch of, Italian – people in the Italian soccer world mentioned that, you know, oh, it's because, you know, they're not cultivating Italian players, this and that. I agree to some extent. There's so many Italian players. The rules for Serie C, B, and A, C and B, Serie C and B are really strict. So it really limits you to Italians and Europeans. But the problem is these teams, they're focusing more on their first team. The clubs are focusing on their first team. For instance, Napoli. Napoli is investing all their money in their first team. They don't invest any money in their settore giovanile, their youth system. You know, Correct. You would think, I had a great conversation with the gentleman's name's Matteo Mariani, and he runs the youth system for Cesena, which is actually an American-owned soccer club. And, you know, he made a valid point. He says, you know, there's teams that either invest on the youth, invest on the first team, or just invest on the first team. I think that a lot of these big clubs should really shift their energy and investments to cultivating the youth. I mean, yes, you're Napoli, you're already there, you're in the big leagues, but you know, it's just very attractive for any young kid growing up in Italy that wants to play professional soccer. You know, if Napoli launches a youth academy, everybody's just going to go there, you know?
Right.
And cool. You know, when I'm building my team, in the youth system, I obviously keep that in mind that, you know, Italians, I need to cultivate Italian players. But, you know, there's an equilibrium, I want to win. I want to become profitable. And, you know, the players that I cultivate, even in the United States, could be, you know, a profitability thing for me, because who knows, I could sell them to, you know, different clubs, or, you know, maybe they're not part of my project. Maybe, you know, I have a brilliant player that comes up through my youth system, and, you know, another club in Spain offers to buy him. I sell him, we make money. So, you know, it's a mix of creating a team and, you know, building a market.
Is that the model you're going to be looking for? To bring in players and look to sell them, like to start with? And then
I want to win.
Your club? To boost your club and then reinvest it within your club.
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, winning is my game plan. So I want to build a team to win. But I also want to create the consistency, and also something that Nocerina and, you know, these lower tier clubs in Italy don't have are the marketing capabilities to market the assets that they already have. You know, we have so many good players that just don't get seen by bigger clubs because the organization doesn't put these players in front of the eyes of the right people.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm good friends with Le Havre Academy in France.
Yep.
And their project is like to sell a player but then reinvest it to find another player. But they still look to win every season.
Well,
they
look to push into the next season. Ben, La Harvest had players like Pogba. They've had Mahrez. Mendy has gone through La Harvest as well. So they've gotten some big-name players to come out of their academy.
Yeah, I think they have – I think one of their players came out of the academy, plays on an opposing team that's about to win the championship this year called Cheniola. He's from Amiens, France, and I think he's out of that academy. But this kid is brilliant. This kid is really brilliant, and I saw him play 2 weeks ago, and I'm telling you right now, we're going to see this guy in Serie A.
Yeah, is that good?
But so you have a player on your team that came up in the Napoli system, went over to Lille. That's Ciro Palmieri.
Yep.
He's young. He's 22.
Is
he going to pan out to be a good striker?
He's great. He's really young. He's aggressive. Definitely has great quality as a player. Obviously to be involved in that deal, he had to be that good. He's really good. I wouldn't say I'm upset with him right now. I'm angry at him. He got a red card and got a 3-game suspension. When I left, I told him, I said, don't ever do that again.
Four out. How many players do you have on your books?
We have 28 players on the roster, and we take 23 to each game.
One player I wish you guys still had, so he didn't have to play against Napoli last week, was Terracciano, the goalkeeper.
Oh, it's a
former Nocerino player.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. They got rid of him too quick. I was hoping to find him when I got there. Our goalkeeper is phenomenal, is really, really good. His name is Vincenzo Venditti. We got him from Gaeta. And, man, he was property of Ascoli. And he is just lights out. What a great goalkeeper. We also have a second goalkeeper who's really young from Palermo. His name is Luciano Pitaresi. He's up and coming, and he's learning from Venditti. So it's a really good combo. So I'm very happy with what we have right now. I'm definitely going to add a few elements to the team just to give us, we have a wonderful team, but we lack a few pieces that really can make us like a dominating team.
Giancarlo, I will say this, though. I mean, granted, I've only watched highlights up to this point, but for you, I promise I'm going to start following.
Great. We have a game tomorrow night. Make sure you watch.
Absolutely.
How do we watch?
I'll send you the link. We're live streaming it on our Facebook page, and I'll send it to you. We have a huge agreement with a company that will be doing our live streaming to make it more accessible. These are like the little things that never happened that I'm going to implement for the following season, but it's going to be a lot easier to watch the games from now on starting next season. But yes, we are live streaming tomorrow. We have a game against Nola. Unfortunately, we will have no fans because the sports judge ruled the fans porte chiuse, means no fans allowed.
Right.
We had an incident where somebody threw a bottle on the field towards the opposing coach last Sunday. Actually happened like right in front of me. I was so angry about it. The sporting judge, we submitted an appeal. We weren't successful, so we have to play tomorrow with no fans in the building.
So once you send the link, we'll share it on all our social media.
Oh,
and we'll also share it to our premier club, Shoreline United. We'll have all the boys try to tune in as well.
What's your youth team you got there? What's the age?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear
you. You said you had a youth team there? What's the age? So is it U18? Your youth team?
My youth team. What about it? I'm sorry.
So what's the age group of it?
Oh, the age group is 2000. Starts 2004. So that is, that's 16? 16, yeah. 16 is the cutoff.
Do you plan on, installing into your club the U10s, U11s, U12s, moving all the way up?
Yeah, so I had a really good idea. What I wanted to do was I wanted to start with four teams. I wanted to keep the Juniores, which is that team that's the 16-year-old team that's pretty much our second team. And then I wanted to start at the youngest age groups because every year add another team. Just because I feel like the players who are like 14, 15, they already belong to, Scuola Calcio already. They've already been locked in. My idea was to start really young and have these players stay with me for like 7-8 years through the ranks and really, you know, develop them. That's my approach. We're on the cusp of really figuring it out. Probably have an answer in the next month or so. But that's my ideas. You know, every year add a team. So start with U8, U9, U10, and then every year go up until and then we'll add a team every year. So we'll eventually have, you know, 8 teams.
Right. Yeah, that's what we're doing at the moment with the club.
Right. And I respect that too, because it builds pride in playing for right. your club. Once you start wearing that shirt at such a young age. Right. It gives you a goal. You know where you want to be and how hard you have to work to get there. So I respect that a lot.
Yeah. And you know, it's, you know, you're cultivating the future. You know, this isn't going to, you know, you're not going to cultivate this player overnight. No. You know, I'd rather have 5-6 years with a player to really understand our, you know, the way we play. And what I'm doing is I'm following kind of the Barcelona method where, you know, we play a 4-3-3 with the first team. I want all my teams to play 4-3-3. I want to keep that formation throughout all the teams so that if I ever need to take out a player and bring a player from the juniores up to the first team, they already know the formation and know the way we play. So I want to keep the curriculum, the soccer curriculum, consistent throughout the whole organization.
Right.
That's funny because Ben and I were talking about that with the Premier Club, keeping formations the same all the way through. Now in Italy, the younger groups, is it 11v11 or do they drop down in numbers like they do here in the States?
They're all 11v11, starting at U8.
I wish. I wish we could do that here.
But yeah. Development in Italy is completely different. Right. That's why, you know, we see those players at that 13, 14. There's a significant difference in technical level because of how long they've been playing on the bigger fields. Yes. Correct.
Yeah, like, you know, here the U10s have the smaller fields. In Italy, they don't play like that. They play with the big fields. Granted, watching a game is painful when, you know, there's all these young guys running on this big field, you know, these little guys running around on the big field. But they learn the area. They learn the space. They learn how to play from a young, you know, a young age. So I think you're right. It really is a benefit.
What about heading? Are they allowed to head at that age?
Oh, yeah. In Italy, you could do anything you want.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So this is the issue we're running to here. They started the no heading protocol from, I think it was, you know, up until U12. And the issue we run here is that the U14 level, they're not going up for 50-50 balls. You got corner kicks, and it's literally drives me crazy where you see the ball bounce 3 or 4 times in the box before, you know, it goes somewhere. So I think it's a detriment here with the rulings that they have to not teach them at a young age.
You know, I understand why they do it, you know, for
absolutely
safety or whatever, but come on, soccer's been around for how many years here? You know, we're going to change, you know, we're going to reinvent the wheel now. You know, I don't agree with it. You know, I obviously hope for player safety, but you know, these young guys got to learn to go up for those balls. You know, heading is a big part of the game, you know, especially on corner kicks coming in. You know, what are you going to kick a corner kick and wait for the ball to drop and then try to kick it? You know, it really doesn't make sense.
It's frustrating. We actually have a couple of questions from some listeners of the show for Giancarlo, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the questions comes from Josh and Proda, and he wanted to know what you think of the Coppa Italia and if you would change it so that Serie D teams are more involved, kind of like how the FA Cup works over in England.
Yeah, so Serie D has their own Coppa Italia.
Right.
We got kicked out of there early before I took over. You know, I think that you're right. I think that, yes, we definitely should throw in Serie D teams into the mix for two reasons, the visibility and the profitability. You have a big team like Juventus show up to Nocerina. We sell 20,000 tickets. That's the most we would sell, you know, in the whole season. So, you know, I think it would help both clubs for the visibility. I mean, the younger clubs, the smaller clubs. 100%. I mean, granted, the level of talent is significantly different, but you know, I think, yeah, it would definitely be a great thing to involve the Serie D clubs in the Coppa Italia.
Granted, the level of talent would be completely different, but Ben, you were just telling me last week, what hasn't there been stories
in the FA Cup? We get it all the time. Where a non-league team can play like a Premier team, third round proper. And sometimes they knock them out, and they share the revenue all the way through.
Right.
It should happen like that. Actually, when Nocerino was in Serie C, they actually did play Juventus in Nocera at our stadium, Stadio San Francesco, and they drew. They drew 1-1, and Bobo Vieri talks about Nocerino in one of his Facebook videos, how a sports journalist ate him alive after the game, saying that he was sleeping for 85 minutes on the pitch. So it has happened, but we were in Serie C at the time. But hopefully they will include the Serie D teams. That'd be great. Thinking about doing a friendly match with Napoli, and I've been in touch with American owners that own clubs in Italy, you know, Ascoli, Cesena, Spal. I've been talking to them, trying to organize something like an American Cup in Italy over the summer. It makes sense. You know, they've been a great help to me, all the owners that are American. We're kind of sticking together and kind of sharing, comparing notes and stuff.
So it's funny you brought that up, because actually one of the next questions from one of our listeners was, what do you think about the influx of American owners going over to the Italian leagues? How do you feel about that?
I mean, obviously I felt really good about it. This is the reason why Americans are investing in Italian soccer, because Italian soccer is so undervalued from an American business aspect. It's insane. It's insane. The chance that I can get Nocerino and Serie D and invest some money into it and get potentially into Serie B, where you get $1.5 million just for TV rights, up to $2 million for TV rights, is insanely undervalued. I mean,
right.
It's all types of Americans are looking to get into Italian soccer because the ease of getting into Serie A, I shouldn't say it's easy, but it's a bigger chance. It's not like you can buy a youth basketball team here in Boston and then eventually get into the NBA. You can't do that.
You can't, correct.
So that's the value, really, what it is. And a lot of these teams have like great fan bases. And, you know, it's sad because some of the teams just can't do it financially. And they lose on these opportunities of creating, you know, mega clubs. You know, I've seen it done. Look at Venezia. Venezia is a team. Look at Venice, how small Venice is. You know,
right.
You got a team, they're in Serie A. Like that's amazing.
With two American players.
Yes, yeah. Buzio and
Tanner Tessman.
Yes, yes, yes.
So where are you gonna be looking to recruit your players from if you're looking to make that next step?
We've already started. We've got a scout in France, Argentina, actually also in Africa. And we're just trying to, what we're going to do this summer is we're going to invite kind of like a combine where we invite 120 players and sort out who really we want to make contracts with. There's a few players that are in the league that we're interested in as well. But, you know, out of all those players that we're going to invite, I think that we're probably going to take 6 or 7 more, add them to the group that we already have.
We were talking before about, you know, Serie C, and especially you mentioned about when Nocerino played Juventus in Serie C. One of my questions was, for a team like yours that's obviously building and fighting to climb the ranks, how do you feel about the rule where they're allowing top clubs like Juventus, Milan, Inter to put teams into Serie C? Obviously, they can't play for promotion, but you'd be playing up against their, let's say, academy players. You'd be playing up against better talent.
Yeah, you know, they own a lot of those big teams. They have like an army of players.
Right.
They have, you know, several different teams and they're paying them good money. So I guess from their point of view, if they can just, you know, insert a team into Serie C and get playing time for these players that just really don't fit their project for the big club. I mean, I think it's good. It's definitely tough for a team like me to, you know, play a U team like Atalanta, Primavera, and Serie C because they're all superstars. But, you know, it is what it is. And, I mean, I don't think it's I don't think it's unfair. I just think it's like a speed bump, but you know, right. You got to clash with these guys, I guess.
See, I'd always view it more as like a mentality thing. Like, you know, when you go to play them, they're not fighting for anything because where they are is where they're going to stay. But meanwhile, I have to give everything I've got in this game still because we got to climb the ranks. We got to move up. Just looking at it as like a player perspective.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, when you belong to like a, say, for instance, a club like Atalanta, you know, you belong to Atalanta, you already have a chance. You already have an advantage over anybody you're already playing. You belong to this mega organization already. There's so many other, unfair or disadvantages in soccer in general. And, you know, the bureaucracy is really difficult, but just doing business in Italy isn't the easiest,
right?
But you know, there's always not corruption with the Italian soccer, but you know, it has its advantages and disadvantages for the smaller clubs.
I have a question. This would be more of a question for like our boys that we coach that aspire to become professional soccer players. All they see are the players that play in La Liga, Serie A, Premier League, and then when they hear Serie D, they go, oh, I can't play there. But those guys, they make a living playing in Serie D, correct? They make decent money.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny because a lot of players come from Serie C to Serie D to make more money because of the tax differences.
Sure.
It's like a different tax bracket in Serie C where you get heavily taxed. So some players say, you know what, I'm not going to go to Serie A. I'm just going to drop down Serie D and get my money. So, you know, we have players that make, you know, really good money. You know, I think our roster is like just under $1 million for the year.
Okay. Well, wow.
Yeah. That's, and it gets, you know, as you go up in the levels, you get, you know, more expensive players or whatnot. But, you know, my words to, you know, these young guys that are trying to, you know, aspire to be professional athletes is, you know, work hard every day, work really hard every day. You know, you never know when an opportunity will come by, especially, you know, and people shouldn't discount, you know, the opportunity to play in Italy in a lower league. I think that the visibility for players like mine are much higher than you know, a player playing for a select team in the United States, because these big clubs are always fishing for young talent. So, you know, some people will say, okay, hey, listen, I'll go play in Serie D, not make much money, but it's a door into Italian soccer. So you never know. You have a great season, you catch fire, you never know what could happen. Next thing you know, that guy, Cisse, he was playing in Serie D. And look at him now, you know?
Wasn't it Eccellenza? It was Serie D?
He was in Serie D, yeah.
Okay. I mean, no matter what, Serie D or Eccellenza, it doesn't matter. He went in 8 weeks from playing Serie D to scoring for Atalanta is unbelievable.
So I think getting into the door is just like getting into Italian soccer, even if it's at the lower levels, is a huge opportunity for somebody that's living in the United States, you know, a young aspiring athlete. Because like I said, you never know what could happen. You can have a breakout season, and then next thing you know, you're making $6 million a year.
Right.
What's the increase in budget if you go up a division?
It's not that drastic. I think the budget fluctuates because of the trasferte, the away games that, you know, we don't fly to our games right now. Our furthest away game is in Nardò, Puglia, which is 6-hour bus ride from Nocera. So adding the component of flying to different places in Serie C is a lot more expensive than what we normally are paying right now. But I would say an average Serie C budget would be anywhere from 2.5 million a year.
Giancarlo, the only other thing I'm wondering, so I have my cousin who is a goalkeeper coach for Pomigliano, the women's club in Serie A.
Pomigliano near Napoli?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I've been talking to him a lot, and he's been telling me about how women's soccer is on the rise, and he's really enjoying his experience over there. As an owner now, is there any interest in starting a woman's side as well, or is that something that's a little bit more complicated to do?
Absolutely. The settore femminile is becoming bigger and bigger in Italy. I've been talking to my team, my executive team, really to figure it out, because I want to add the femminile, I want to add the youth system, and I want to add esports, which is becoming huge in the soccer world. It sounds crazy, but it is. But
no, I believe you. I know.
I'm going to hold an open tryout to try to put together a team for the femminile. It'd be wonderful.
Yeah, my friend at the Harvard Academy, they bring over like 10 women from the U.S. at the end of their college every year.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Well, if you have tryouts for the femminile, let me know. I'll send out flyers to my hometown. We'll get you some females from there to come up.
That'd be great. I'm hoping to host a couple tryouts here in the United States too. Like I said, I want to try to maybe get, you know, a couple players. I found a striker that I love. He's the leading goal scorer in the country. He may be tough to sign because I'm sure he's getting offers from all different MLS teams, but
right.
I had reached out to him and his passport was expired, or I would have already flew him out.
Is there a market for a 43-year-old
washed up player? Absolutely. Perfect.
I'm coming to your tryout.
Absolutely. If you can take somebody out, you're in.
Well, listen, you mentioned the college thing, but like the little that I have followed of the Serie A Femminile, a lot of their players are young American players that they sign right out of college.
Yeah, correct.
And they're creating a strong, interesting league. Like I've watched a few of the games that just because purely my cousin was coaching, so I had some interest, and they're exciting to watch. They play well.
Yeah, something that I'm like trying is basically another speed bump is they're making the rules similar for the femminile, for the women's teams. Since we're not in Serie A, women, our team would start from the bottom. And it's really tough to find Italian women to play. You know, it's limited. So you really have to like pull players from other European countries. And if they don't let me take, you know, Americans there, then I have to figure something out. The rules and the criteria are a little strange, but hopefully they change them to make it easier.
Right.
I'm probably going to butcher his last name because I butcher everybody's last name. Was it D'Amico?
Wait, D'Amico or Danilo?
D'Amico, yeah, D'Amico, Gaetano D'Amico.
Gaetano D'Amico, yes. He's our leading goal scorer.
I was looking at his stats. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, he's really good. He's a hard worker. This is the type of kid that comes to practice and gives 110% practice every day. He's going to definitely develop to be a really, really, really good player. And he's already a great player. And he's just a great teammate too. You know, you can just tell in and outside the locker room, just the kind of guy he is. I'm proud of him. He's killing it right now.
That's awesome.
Hopefully he scores tomorrow.
If you got time, we'll go, we'll take a break here and then we'll jump into City F for a few minutes.
Absolutely. I love Serie A, man.
So, Giancarlo, just to let you know, back in the beginning of the season, Antonio and I made our picks for Serie A in the Premier League. And for Serie A, I picked Napoli to win. Everyone thought it was crazy. For Premier League, I picked Arsenal. Everyone still thinks I'm crazy. We'll jump into Serie A, and we'll start with Napoli.
Yes.
They took a beating.
Man, it's... Yeah, like I said, Fiorentina is really our how do I say this? This is like it's just like they're just like our arch enemy that just like doesn't want to leave us alone. It's like, you know, it's an arch enemy that we don't even hate. They just beat us in the most awkward situations, the most vital situations.
It's funny though. He says we don't even hate. Like it's true. We don't hate Fiorentina. And I hate to bring this instance up, but when Astori passed away, right? Napoli was in full support of Astori Fiorentina. But for whatever reason, the Fiorentini hate us. And I can't wrap my head around it. We never did anything to them. I can understand if you're a Juve fan.
I think the Fiorentini hate everybody. They hate everybody. I don't think there's anybody that they do like, tell you the truth. But I'll tell you what. Fiorentina is one of those teams that really, like, similar to Napoli, you know, kind of dropped down, had some economic problems, and they kind of fought back in, and they're like in the rebuilding stage. But they're one of those teams that are just like stagnant. Like they never like make Europa League. They're never in the top half, but they're not relegating. They're not getting relegated. It's crazy. It's like, I don't know if I can say this, but like they're a team that just breaks balls. Like they play when they want, and then some of the games they just don't show up.
Well, for as far as I can remember, Fiorentina has done the same thing, right? From Baggio to Vlahovic, they have had some of the best players, and then they get rid of them. They keep them afloat, yeah, and then cash in on them.
Well, our buddy Marino puts it best. Marino always says, he's like, you know, Fiorentina is Juve's youth system.
Right. That makes sense.
It really is. You know, you look at Chiesa, Bernardeschi, all these guys, they just fall right into Juve's lap.
But not only that, Cuadrado also played. Chiellini also played. All these major Juventus players at one point played for Fiorentina.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe Agnelli owns them too.
Well, listen, I mean, I had Fiorentina finishing fifth this year. I put them in the top five. I knew they were going to be a good club, and I definitely like the direction that ownership has taken them in. And everybody thought it was such a bad move that they sold Vlahovic. But as great as Vlahovic is, and I wish Napoli would buy a player of his caliber, they didn't need him because they're building a system over there. And that's what I like about them. There's still a few players away, but
I read an article today. They were like, what would happen if, you know, where would Fiorentina be if Vlahovic was still in the mix? If he was still in Fiorentina. And you're right. I don't think that it would be much different. He's a great striker and he scores a ton of goals, but I don't think he really was a difference maker in Fiorentina. I shouldn't say I had a bad vision on him. I didn't think that he was the real deal. You know, he was scoring these goals. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Belotti, where he's just like there at the right time and he just scores these goals. But I was wrong. And I had the same opinion on Haaland, and I was really wrong on that one. So I was right about Piatek, though. I was right about Piatek.
Listen, you made three predictions. One of them's bound to be right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Anthony can tell you. Do you play any Fanta Calcio at all?
No, I didn't. I didn't this year. I got invited to do it. I've been really wanting to do Fanta Calcio, and I happened to be in Italy when my American friends back here were doing, we're starting it up and the Asta and all that stuff, and I'm actually glad that I didn't do it because it would just be driving me nuts.
Well, Anthony and I play together, and he could tell you during our Asta, there was one player that I kept outbidding everybody on. I didn't care if I blew my whole budget. I had to get him, and it was Vlahovic. Ever since last year, I loved him. I knew that he was going to be something special.
Yeah, he definitely is something special, man. And you know what? Trying to make what I said, you know, valid, is I think if you put me as a striker at Juventus, I could even score. You know, I think it's the team behind him, but he's doing a great job. He's impressing me, and hopefully he keeps it up.
Enough about Fiorentina. Now I want to know the truth between the top three, what you think. Milan, Inter, and Napoli, who's got the best chances right now to take the Scudetto?
Honestly, I think that Milan always always kind of falls short in the end of the season. Like, you know, just from past experiences, they haven't been consistent towards like the end, really, like the final run of the season. So I think that if anybody, I think that Inter has the most valid, the best team to win the Scudetto.
As of right now, they also have the easiest path.
Inter is the real deal. I mean, you know, look at their midfield. Their whole team is stacked. They're the real deal. But Milan's been impressing me too. Like, you know, if seeing Milan from past years, where they're in the run, and then the last, the last couple months of the season, they just fall apart. But they haven't fell apart yet. But I'm waiting for it.
See, that's the thing with Milan. I feel like all season, especially on this show, Anthony's an AC Milan fan over here, so I keep telling them they can't keep it up. They're gonna fall. There's no way that AC Milan can keep this up. They're still in first place as of right now. I get it. Inter has a game in hand, but I don't understand how they've been able to do what they've done this season. Especially with Brahim Diaz not playing up to his level as a center attacking mid.
And
I heard that they're getting Origi. I don't know how true that is, but I think that would be a really good piece to add to that team. Another thing that really bothers me with Milan, which I don't know, I don't think that a player should be able to make a contract mid-season. Because this whole Kessie situation, for me, I think Kessie's the real deal, but I guess he signed a deal to leave already.
Barcelona.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't think that this that should happen mid-season, because I think it could affect his play. Hey, I'm not going into a 50-50 ball knowing that I could potentially get hurt. I'm not going to play like a superstar now. I'm going to Barcelona next year, and I'm going to be a superstar.
They had that in the pandemic, didn't they? The players refused to cut them off season afterwards.
Correct.
Yeah.
A player like Kessié, in his situation, though, what I'm just playing devil's advocate here. What if a player like him has to play till the end of the season without being able to negotiate a contract, even though he's a free transfer, but he gets hurt going to end the season? Who's going to want him then?
I mean, you're already part of a club that's historical. I mean, Milan is the best Italian club, like on the world level. If you think about it, if you look at there, he's already at the top level. I don't know. I feel like I'm pulling for Milan too, because I actually like Milan over Inter, as far as just, you know, as me as personally. But you know, I just, you know, you see certain things happen that could affect the level of play. It really bothers me, especially if I was, you know, if I owned Milan, I would just tell a player, hey, listen, you guys can't release any of this information to the public. Make your deals, whatever you got to do. Actually, I'm not okay with them making deals, especially when you're fighting for the Scudetto.
If you're
a Fiorentina and you're looking to make a deal with Barcelona, so be it. But if you're fighting for the Scudetto, I mean, that's just something that bothers me, but it is what it is.
So overall, you think Inter is going to take the whole thing then?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Napoli's got one shot, and it's they have to win out while Inter drops at least one game. Well, they have to drop it no matter what. And Milan needs to get another tie. That's the only way. And it's going to be tough because Napoli still has to play Roma, right?
Yeah, Rome.
Yeah, this week at Spinazzola's back.
Like Genoa and Spezia, those games are not like done deals for me. Like no. Napoli only loses to those lower tier teams.
Well, hold up. We've gotten a little bit better. We lost that small club mentality in a way. We now lose to the bigger clubs as well. We're not losing to the smaller ones as often.
In the position that we're in, where you need to kind of pretty much like win outright, you know, to fight for the Scudetto, it just scares me. You know, you got teams like Genoa that decides to play like Juventus one day against Naples. That's what really scares me. You know, I've seen small clubs like in the past, like Crotone come in and beat Napoli, you know? You just never know.
As much as Genoa has improved under their new coach and, you know, they're playing hard, I'm not so much worried about them as a Napoli fan as I am about Empoli and Sassuolo. Empoli and Sassuolo seem to have our number. Like you were talking about Fiorentina before and Verona. Those two teams just always play Napoli so well. And Sassuolo, forget it, these past couple of years. I think actually this season currently, when we played them, they should have won. But a goal got called back, so they ended up in a tie, 2-2.
Yeah. And I saw today that Scamacca renewed with Sassuolo to 2026. That guy, I really like that guy. I haven't seen enough of him, but I think he's going to be the real deal.
Scamacca is going to be good, and that's something that Sassuolo needs to keep doing. They need to hold on to their players because they could be like an Atalanta. They've produced so much talent, but they always let the talent leave, that if Sassuolo starts to keep everybody, you could see them fight for that fourth place. You know, it's definitely Europa League, but maybe push the Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, they had, with Jeremy Boga, right? He was there.
Yep, Boga was there. I mean, obviously they still have Berardi. Who else was at Sassuolo that I can't think of at the moment? He's playing for a big club. It'll come to me.
Field, I think, not Juric, is it? No, it's not him. He's on Salernitana. I think Sassuolo, yes, is going to give Naples a hard time, as they always do. I'm hoping for the best, man. I really hope that Naples can pull it through. But my prediction is that Milan is going to do what they always do, maybe lose three out of the next six games or whatever that's left. And then I think that Inter is just going to go undefeated and go into a different gear. And I think Napoli will end up finishing second place, or even third. I mean, yeah, second.
Oh, Giancarlo, don't tell me that. I can't take another second place finish. After 2018, I can't do another second place.
I've gotten used to just finishing in second place. You know, that's what I look forward to every year.
I stand by my word. I think they're going to pull this one off because the following week, Inter plays Roma, and I'm pretty sure Spinazzola is going to play the full 90 minutes. And I don't think they can handle that speed back there. So
it's so good to hear that he's back. That's what the national team needs. Spinazzola. Spina was the difference maker. That guy was flying up the wing, man. Nobody could catch him. He was literally the difference maker. As soon as he went down, it changed the whole dynamic of everything. I was like, oh, man.
The guy's so fast, he tore his Achilles tendon. He was running so fast. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, no contact, no nothing.
I'm not sold on Milan, on Roma, by the way. I don't think Roma has what it takes to finish strong. I'm not impressed with them at all.
Next season, you'll see a different Roma.
I mean, I think it's that guy, you know, the Tommy Abraham. Like, you know, he some games he's, you know, the phenomenal, and then some games he's just, you know, they can't find them. You know, and Pellegrini's good. You know, I don't think it's a Roma of like the good old days where Roma was Roma. I think they're in a rebuilding phase. But, you know, I think Napoli should be able to beat them. I'm comfortable with the Napoli-Roma match for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that too. But Tammy Abraham, I will say it's not hard as an English player leaving the Premier League and going to play in, you know, any other league, especially Serie A. And I feel like he's done well for his first season. I think there was a statistic we talked about not too long ago. He's the top scoring Englishman outside of England.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sold on him. But, you know, I might be wrong.
Hold up. Let me say something. If Giancarlo's not sold on him, that means he has the chance to be the next Haaland.
He's a superstar. Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. He's out now.
He was also, I agree. I also don't like the way Roma plays, like, you know, formation wise. I don't know. I think like they're I don't know how to say it in English. They're relying too much on Pellegrini. But I don't think Pellegrini's a difference maker. You know, he doesn't make the la differenza in Italian. I say it
right.
They need to bring in some big guys. I think Roma has, you know, the history and definitely the money to bring in some really big players. You're like a mediocre team at the moment.
I've been pitching this theory for probably the last 6 months. They all call me crazy. But with Mourinho coaching there and, you know, Roma needing those big impact players, I've been pitching that Salah is going to go back to Roma this offseason.
No, he's not.
Okay, we'll see.
Honestly, I love Salah. I think that he wasn't – when he was in Rome, he wasn't the Salah that we see now in the Premier League.
No.
Which goes to – which here's another point that I want to make. I think that the Italian League is very defensive and it's harder to score than the Premier League. But I could – you know, I think Salah would be a really great player to insert into the Roma – the Roma roster, and he would definitely make the difference. That guy flies.
He does, and he owes Roma a bit. But to further your point about how the Serie A is more defensive, fun little fact we were just looking up. Kulusevski, who just left Juventus in, what was it, about 50 games with Juventus, right?
Yep.
He had 6 assists and 4 goals. In 10 games with Tottenham, he has 6 assists and 3 goals.
And we're going to have this conversation with EPL and Serie A.
We have Ben here. We got to have this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, you hit it right on the nail. I think that the Italian league is a much harder league to score in. You know, it's very physical in the back. And you know, a lot of these teams position themselves – you know, 4 in the back, it's hard to score. It really is hard to score.
It's a lot slower and deeper, though, isn't it? You drop deeper.
Yeah.
Back to defense.
I feel like, you know, speed is more of a factor in the EPL. You know, for strikers, I feel like it's just a foot race at the end of the day to score goals. And in Italy, it's like, you know, it's you got to worry about Chiellini coming at you like a truck. You know, it's just, I think it's a lot more physical in the back and it's really hard. But then again, you know, you look at guys like Higuain, he scored, you know, 30 goals or 32 goals in Naples. And then, you know, he scored a bunch of goals in Juventus too. And then Chelsea, you know, what was that, you know?
Yeah, that's happened to a few players at Chelsea.
Lukaku too.
Yeah. Lukaku went one game. He only touched the ball. What?
Seven times the whole game.
In Chelsea a few weeks back?
Yeah, he's looking to come back to Italy, they say.
Yeah.
He said he wants to come back.
And then you look at Jorginho. It's too hard for him at the Premier League.
Look at Jorginho. When Chelsea bought Jorginho, I think it was for 60 million pounds or something. I was saying to myself, wow, Maurizio Sarri just gave a gift to Naples. Wow, who's going to buy Jorginho for this kind of money? This is unbelievable. Take him. And then he's like a superstar. You know, he's like type player in England. So I'm very curious to see, how these players shake out. Tammy Abraham, I haven't seen enough of him to make an actual judgment on. But, you know, these players might take, a year or two to get used to Italian strategies.
Speaking of the Premier League, Man City and Liverpool just sealed the deal in Champions League. And then we have a tight race there, as just like we do in Serie A, where in the Premier League, you have Man City with 74 points, Liverpool with 73 points. It's been a long time since it's been that tight, right, Ben?
Oh, no, the last 2 years have been tight.
Tight like this, yeah. By one point.
Liverpool win and Man City win 2-2 at the weekend.
Right.
The last time was when Liverpool actually won the Champions League, right? That they ran with the league and the Champions League.
Close, yeah.
Yeah, Man City since tightened the gaps, though.
What do you guys like in the Premier League? What are your teams?
Me, Arsenal. It's a tough last couple of years.
Yeah.
I'm a Fulham fan, just because they gave us Anguissa.
For now, until he goes
back. I love
Anguissa.
I think he's a difference maker in the midfield.
So, I did break some bad news. Fulham's going to be coming up to the Premier League. They're probably going to take him back. So, you might as well say bye at the end of the month.
See, but that's Monopoly smart. We have the option to buy him. So they're trying to get him for less money, but no matter what, they're going to spend the money for Anguissa.
What do you think of the Liverpool system with the owners from Boston?
I think that they're brilliant. They basically, the way they're structured is fantastic. And, I look at things more than just the actual team, as far as their marketing and their youth system and the academies that they're building all over the country.
Yeah.
In the United States, they're already a fortress, but they're building it even more. And I love that. I think they're doing a fantastic job with the marketing too. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. They say on game day as well, at the stadium, they try and build it like America, where it's more fun, razzmatazz outside.
Right. So they probably have
everything's going on around.
Right. Right. Little fan festivals and, things like
that stuff is brilliant. Granted, I don't think they need help driving fans to the stadium, but the way I look at it is a soccer game and the production. So my background is event production. I put on concerts, events, all this stuff. You got to treat these soccer games like a show. So them creating these activations outside the stadium pregame is brilliant to me, and I'm hoping to implement this kind of stuff at Noche Arena. Man United, what? I'm looking at the table and I'm just like, wow, Man United, man, wow.
Well, there is two words that we've used all season long for Man United: Cristiano Ronaldo.
Every time you go back to it, you talk about Man United, though, back in England, they always blame the owners. I don't know why, because they seem to pump money into it.
Cristiano Ronaldo is one of those players, and I said this when he was over at Juventus. He's the player that you either you get Cristiano Ronaldo, and then you build the team around him. I feel like Man U is just a mixture of superstars and kind of independent players where they just, there's no synergy. Juventus really struggled with that too. And as soon as Ronaldo left, I think Juventus started clicking a little bit better.
Well, took them some time.
Yeah, you got Pogba there. They got a wonderful team. They got a ton of guys, Manchester United.
So they're all individuals, a little team.
So here's the thing. Man United is right now they seem like a bunch of individuals. But before Ronaldo got there this season, we're forgetting that Man United was firing on all cylinders. They were clicking as a team. And I truly believe Ronaldo went in and ruined all that chemistry that Man United had built.
Yeah.
I think that team would be fighting for first place right now had Ronaldo not gone there.
I think that's a big statement.
Listen, it was also a big statement that I made when everybody said that, Ronaldo going to Man United was going to be such a great thing. And I was the first one to say they just ruined themselves by Ronaldo going there. Because I saw what he did at Juve.
Yeah.
He brought down the level of the team. He's a great individual player, but you'll never build a team around him.
I mean, Fred was scoring before he went over there. So
listen, that was the one thing I kept repeating. Like, they had Fred involved in play, and we all know how atrocious Fred can be sometimes.
Any rumors on where Pogba's going?
Nocerina, I heard.
Yeah, no, Chedina. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They say he could end up on Juventus again, which I thought was a little strange. But I'm so confused on Pogba. Really, I don't know if he's an issue for like the teams. Like, you know, he's not playing as much as I'd like to see him play. And I don't know. It's just, like, it's weird. I think he's, when he's at the top of his game, he's probably one of the best midfielders to play the game. I don't know. He's one of those guys you can't, like, you know, sync with.
Yeah, he's not consistent.
But I think he's going to be like a Aubameyang. I think he just needs a change of scenery. Look at Aubameyang. As soon as he leaves Arsenal, goes to Barcelona, guy's a superstar again. I think Pogba's going to be the same way once he finally leaves Man United.
That was the whole thing with Lingard. I saw Lingard. When Lingard left, I think he went to
He went West Ham last year on loan, did excellent. Yeah. And then this year, they wouldn't let him go. They're just not playing him at all.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Makes no sense. Lingard should be playing on loan somewhere.
Yeah. They wouldn't even let him go to Newcastle.
Yeah, he was just not the Lingard they were looking for at Man U, and then he went on loan and was just like the superstar.
I mean, Man United also doesn't always make the best financial decisions, as we remember the Arturo Vidal and Alexis Sanchez scenario, right? That they ended up going. Yeah, Sanchez ended up going to Inter. Man United was still paying like half of his salary while he's playing for Inter, right?
I have two more questions for you. All right. Who takes Champions League? We got two La Liga teams.
Do we have an update on the scores right now?
Man City's through and Liverpool's through. Villarreal and Real Madrid.
Oh, man. I think Man City is just the powerhouse there. Real Madrid really impressed me, you know, the way they play. They still got it. That guy Benzema is just something else. My prediction, Man City.
Antonio?
Listen, I'm just going on pure sentimental reasons here, but I'm going Villarreal. No, listen, hear me out. Hear me out.
That's fine.
I love that pick.
Raul Albiol used to play for Napoli.
Yes.
Still think he's one of the greatest defenders that we've ever had. I want to see him win a Champions League.
I was afraid to say that on camera.
I'm not afraid to say anything on camera at this point. Villarreal for Raul Albiol. And listen, crazier things have happened. They knocked out Bayern Munich, who everybody had winning this tournament. So I don't want to hear that they can't do it.
That was going to take crazy now.
Okay.
I'll go Man City as well.
I can't believe Napoli got rid of Raul Albiol. They said he was too old. Here he is.
Well, they didn't get rid of him, Giancarlo. He asked to go back home. He was starting to feel his age, and he asked if he could go back home.
Really?
That's what I was reading at the time. So unless you know more than I do, but that's what I heard back then.
Yeah. I mean, from what my understanding was, I thought ADL said that, you know, he wasn't focusing on older defensemen. And he wanted some young blood. That's what I read. But, you know, I could be wrong. But, yeah, I mean, you got to love the guy. He played for Napoli. How old is he? 40?
52.
Raul Albiol has got to be close. He's his late 30s or early 40s for sure. Because when he was playing at Napoli, he was 33. So,
Real is one of those teams that just play those big games. Like whenever they're in any tournament, like they just don't lose. And then they play La Liga, and it's like, eh.
I'm taking Liverpool to win this whole thing.
Thanks.
We don't know yet. It's probably Liverpool. No, they have Man City. So I don't think they really have a chance beating Man City.
Isn't there a rule where in the semifinals, or was it earlier on? But there's a rule that I believe teams from the same country can't play. Oh, so it's before, not in the semis. Okay.
But they've already had the draw where we know who's playing who.
Right.
So I think that's the way it lines up.
It's the quarterfinals or the semifinals you can't play.
Yeah, I think the semifinals are going to be Man City, Villarreal, and Liverpool, Real Madrid.
We didn't mention them, but we can't sleep on Real Madrid either. Yeah. And Giancarlo was talking about Adiel calling players too old.
Benzema,
right. In 2018, when Ancelotti wanted to bring him over to Napoli, De Laurentiis came out and he said, oh, what are we going to do with old strikers? We don't need strikers like him. On fire this season, especially in the Champions League. Yeah. He could single-handedly win the whole thing for them.
That's my only criticism about De Laurentiis is he's not like a fan, you know. It's like, I get it, like, you know, you're running a club, you know, you got to make sure the budget is the budget, but he's clearly like very profitable. And he said the same thing about Cavani, bringing Cavani back. It's like, dude, you didn't want to bring Cavani back, but then all of a sudden he's like, he's just an animal again. It's like, and he said the same thing. Oh, you know, he's too old. He's too old. He's too old. You know, Benzema's the man. He that's what I like to call a shutdown striker. Like, he's the guy. And I think that Real Madrid really have a great opportunity to win the Champions League because they have the experience. They've been at this level several times. You know, you look through the whole roster, the whole starting 11. I mean, these guys have been at this level, at this type of games all the time. You know, they're used to being there. So I think that may be the difference maker between them and Villarreal.
And the other difference maker too, Ancelotti, arguably one of the best Italian coaches ever. And the Champions League is his tournament. He just knows how to win the Champions League.
For sure. For sure. I'm so upset that it really didn't work in Naples with Ancelotti.
I mean, how was it going to work if they're not buying him the players that he needs to succeed?
Yeah. And you know what? As a fan, that really was like, when they brought in Ancelotti, I was like, wow, we're going to start seeing like real players show up to Naples now. Like, this is going to be crazy.
And we got Almas.
We didn't get any, but we got Gattuso.
Yeah. He brought Gattuso to us. I will say though, Ancelotti did get us Almas. I'm happy about that one.
When they were talking about, Almas is great. When they were talking about Jaime Rodriguez, James Rodriguez coming to Naples, I was like, wow, here we go. This is the first one of many. Here we go. And then he decided to not come to Naples. But yeah.
At the time, did you ever hear the rumor about Cristiano Ronaldo?
I thought that was an April Fool's joke.
No. So listen, I could be wrong, but I was in Italy at the time. And the rumors that I was hearing was that Cristiano Ronaldo actually contacted Ancelotti because that's his favorite coach. But Napoli just didn't have the funds to make it happen. But before he went to Juve, he was in talks with Ancelotti.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. I hate the guy, but man, if he came to Naples, I'd love him. He's like one of those guys that you just hate, but if he's yours, you love him.
Last question for me. Being that Italy's out of the World Cup, who's going to win this whole thing?
USA.
All right. That's we're pulling for them, but I honestly think England's too strong of a team.
You think England's your team?
I think they're going to win. They're too strong all the way around. And they got the depth on the bench.
I have this this love-hate relationship with England. I mean, after the Euros, I was just like, I don't want to see them win anything. But, you know, you've got these guys, you know, you got France, you got Spain, you got Portugal's through. Yeah, Portugal's one of those teams that just could show up in the mix. But yeah, you're probably right. I think England is definitely the heavy favorite. I'd like to see the United States make some noise in the tournament.
I think they'll make a run.
They're not going to win. I mean, well, I shouldn't say they're not, you never know, but I just,
they'll definitely make it through.
I want United States to get some respect on the national level, the international level. You know, I feel like they have so many good players. They're playing all throughout Europe. I think it's finally a team that's, you know, everybody always discounts like the United States, you know, when we talk soccer. But I'm telling you, I really see that they're putting together a really, really good team. They're struggling with teams like, you know, Panama and these other teams, Mexico, whatever. But, you know, they can shake out these, iron out the wrinkles. And I really think that they could do some damage.
Antonio thinks Qatar is going to win the whole thing.
All right. Enough.
I mean,
it's...
I mean, they could win. You never know. They got a lot of money, and you know these FIFA guys. You know these FIFA guys.
Giancarlo, you don't know what I went through last week when we were recording our episode about how I'm trying to convince them that Qatar isn't going to win it all, but at least make it out of their group stages.
Well, you want to hear something crazy, and I believe that they're going to get out of their stage because I hate to say this, and this is like goes against like everything that I really believe in, but. You know, when it comes to World Cup and it comes to FIFA and it comes to money, I think that there's been so much known corruption in that situation that, you know, it really bothers me just thinking about that. My father took me in 2002 to Japan. We watched Italy versus Croatia.
Uh-oh.
You guys want to, you know, talk about getting robbed and, you know, it was blatantly robbed. And, you know, we played against We played against South Korea, I believe. And
it was South Korea. I'll never. We talk about trauma as children. Like, I'm still traumatized to this day because of
that. Same here. Yeah, same here. I was like, you know, I watched that game, the Croatia game, with my father, and it honestly was such a surreal experience. I think we tied 2-2. It was a while back. But I remember Trapattoni was there, and it was like the Wonder Years, Vieri, everybody was there. So, you know, for a team like South Korea to come make it through the group stage and play like this, all like that, you know, I would never think twice about Qatar not coming out of the group stage. It could happen. It probably will happen, unfortunately.
I have to point out one other thing, though. There's one team that he didn't mention to win the World Cup, and is why I've been saying they're going to win it, because nobody is expecting them to. Argentina.
Nah.
Exactly. His argument is because there's no superstars on the team other than Messi, so nobody's focusing. But the problem is, every time they go, there's only one superstar, and that's who they look to go to, and that's why they never make it anywhere.
They're one of those teams that just they also have no synergy, especially when they play in these big games. It's like, you know, you have Argentina from the past that, like, you know, won World Cups from Maradona and this and that. And then after that, you know, you get into the, you know, the Batistuta realm. You know, they've always had these, like, really good players. They just can never put it together. I really don't see them doing any damage. But then again, I've been wrong several times.
Listen, anything can happen. I think at this time, I see them have a good chance. They remind me a little bit of that 06 Italy team, but obviously with a superstar like Lionel Messi.
Well, I mean, what are the defensive options?
Okay, so there, I can't win this argument. Defensively, yeah. Defensively, they're going to be in some trouble. I think they still have Otamendi starting, right? Yeah. So, but I do like their goalkeepers. Their goalkeepers have been impressing. And I think from what I've seen, especially in the qualification games, Argentina holds possession of the ball. They're not just looking for that quick counter. So
one of them plays in Serie A, correct?
Which one?
One of the keepers for Argentina. Or am I thinking Uruguay? Musi. No.
My favorite from there is Geronimo Rulli. Is playing over for Villarreal, actually. Okay. But yeah, their other keeper plays in England, right? Yeah. He's the Aston Villa goalkeeper. So they got two experienced goalkeepers.
I love their midfield. Their midfield, obviously. I mean, put Messi aside, they have so many different weapons. They got Depaul. They got is Paredes Argentinian? Yes, he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great too. He's another guy that Rome had that let slip away.
All right, Giancarlo, we're gonna call this a wrap here.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I'll be following, and hopefully you guys are following Noche Arena. And
of course,
hopefully we get to the top. You know,
where can our listeners find you?
On Instagram, it's ASD Noche Arena Official, and that's our Facebook handle as well. And follow. Hopefully, you could come on the journey with us to the rise of Noche Arena. You know, we hope to go to the high levels.
Sounds good. It was a pleasure meeting you, talking to you. I'm sure we'll have you on again.
100%, guys. Thank you so much. And Forza Napoli.
Forza Napoli, Giancarlo. Forza Molossi, right?
Forza Molossi, yes, 100%.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Thanks.